trying to censor myself a little bit today because I'm trying not to get upset, trying not to make sure you got the kids with the earmuffs on. Episode 1225 of Diz Runs Radio is a quick tip episode. Today's quick tip, correlation without causation. Hey, y'all. Real quick, before we dive into today's quick tip episode of the show, I want to give a big heartfelt thank you and a little shout out to Miss Pam, who jumped on board the Patreon train recently, sending me a little proverbial cup of coffee or two every month. And if you haven't heard me talk about Patreon before, or if you have, but you've always kind of just dismissed it, hey, you know, nothing super required there, nothing super fancy there, but it is a great way to kind of support the work that we're doing here. If you get something out of the show, at least semi-regularly, maybe it's a couple of chuckles and an occasional lol. Maybe it's actually something useful that has helped you as a runner. Obviously there's plenty of ways to say thank you and plenty of them that are free, you know, sharing the show, telling other people about the show, engaging on social media, things like that are always super helpful. But if you can kick a couple of bucks my way, hey, that's super helpful in a different way as well. So Patreon is a great way to do that. patreon.com/dizruns is the link. And basically what that does is you commit to, you know, $1, $2, $5, $10, whatever you think this is worth, each month. And it charges your card each month, and you're always in control. So if your situation changes, if I say something, you're like, screw this guy, I don't want to support him anymore, you just log into Patreon and you say, hey, this guy's a clown, I don't want to give him any more money. Maybe I say something that pushes you over the edge to be like, I want to give him a couple extra bucks, and you want to add to your support. Hey, that's always appreciated. But one way or the other, you're in control. I don't have your credit card number. I'm out of this scenario. This is between you and your budget, I guess, and Patreon, I guess, because they have your credit card information. But anyway, if you want to support the show, you're welcome to do so. Anybody who's in Patreon or is a patron of the show, you know, we have a little book club that you're welcome to be a part of. Would love to have a few more voices. We've got a pretty steady 3 or 4 that tend to show up. But we'd love to have it to be a pretty steady 6 or 8, you know, of people that are already part of Patreon and haven't joined a book club recently, or maybe you've never been part of it. You know, we're reading a book just about every month, discussing it just about every month. So jump on board. In addition to the good feels of supporting this little bit of nonsense that we put out into the world every week. So patreon.com/dizruns is the link. Once again, thank you, Pam, for jumping on board, and to everybody who's been on board in the past and jumped off for various reasons, appreciate your support to get us to this point. That has gotten us to this point. And for those that are still on board, in addition to Pam, thank you once again for your continued support each and every month. Patreon.com/dizruns. So today, want to maybe go a little bit deeper into the point I was trying to get to last week, and I'm not sure I did, or maybe come at it from a slightly different angle. It's a similar frustration, I think, that has spurred this episode. But the title being, you know, something along the lines of correlation, even without direct causation. And I think we're all somewhat familiar with the saying that correlation does not equal causation. And I'm not trying to discredit that. I mean, that's still very, very true, right? But there are a lot of instances that go on both sides. Basically, you know, when it comes to a correlation and a lack of causation, sometimes that's because it's just two completely unrelated factors. Right? And there is no through line there. But sometimes there is a through line. Sometimes there is a good connection, even if it's not a direct causation. And that's where I want to spend a little bit more time kind of digging into today, which again, maybe it overlaps a decent amount with last week's episode about, you know, kind of science not always being black and white. And just because something is science supports one thing or science discredits something doesn't mean that it's universal. Doesn't mean that it's always true for everybody, and especially when it comes to biological science, human science, and running science. And to try to illustrate kind of the differences between the correlation causation scenario before we really try to, hopefully don't get too lost in the weeds before we dig into the brass tacks today, I'm assuming that most of you have at least heard of the correlation causation thing between ice cream and shark bites. Right. And I'm sure this is just kind of a made up statistic, although maybe there's a little bit of reality to it. But as the example goes, you know, summertime, there's an increase in a beachside town in, you know, insert ocean city here. you know, there's an increase in ice cream sales, and there's also an increase in shark bites. And so the example is that there's not a correlation between increased ice cream sales and increased shark bites, right? Like the two don't have anything to do with each other. It's just, is, you know, the fact of the matter is it's hot, it's summertime, maybe there's more vacationers in town, and people want ice cream in the summer months, right? People also go into the ocean in the summer months when it's hot to cool down, to swim, the water's warm. And if you're in the ocean, there's more people in the ocean, more chance that a shark's going to take a little nibble. But it's not like if we sell a bunch of ice cream in December, there's not necessarily going to be a lot of shark bites in December, right? So that's a correlation where there's no connection to causation there. But another scenario we've talked about a few times in the past, and quite frankly gets my blood boiling a little bit, is the misunderstanding between lactic acid and muscle soreness, right? There's some folks, maybe you haven't heard that episode or those couple of times I've discussed it or gotten worked up about it. But the truth of the matter is that lactic acid does not cause muscle soreness. Okay. It doesn't. There's no direct causation, direct line, lactic acid, muscle soreness. There's a strong correlation there though, right? Because the way that the reason that our bodies produce lactic acid is when we're doing high intensity workouts, sprints, heavy lifts, things like that, right? And especially when you're talking about some type of high endurance that's a little bit longer, or high intensity that's a little bit longer duration, so some type of harder speed workout, running beyond easy pace, so race day pace, things like that. Part of the byproducts of anaerobic glycolysis, and this isn't going to be a deep physiology lesson, but one of the byproducts of that is lactic acid. All right, so you work hard, your body produces lactic acid. It's a totally natural process. Lactic acid causes your muscles to fail, which basically, like, that's when you start to feel the burn. That's when you start to your muscles can't continue to operate at that level of intensity. They start to decrease the amount of power they're able to produce until it's. Ultimately, it ends up slowing your body down. You get rid of the lactic acid, yada, yada, yada. So lactic acid causes muscle failure or muscle fatigue. What causes the soreness after the fact is not the lactic acid. It's the damage that your body has done, the damage that has undergone or been undergone at your muscle level, your muscular level. These powerful contractions to push yourself on these sprint repeats or this heavy, heavy workout. All right, you're damaging muscle tissue. That's a natural part of the process. When you work hard, you damage muscle tissue. That muscle tissue repairs itself, and that's how you get stronger, faster, et cetera, et cetera. But that tearing, literally, I mean, it's micro tears. It's not like you're injuring yourself, but the micro tears of the muscle tissue, that creates an inflammatory response, the healing response, and that's what produces the muscle soreness. So high-intensity exercise, you get lactic acid as a byproduct. High intensity exercise, you're likely to damage your muscle cells, and that repairing process is going to be muscle soreness. Okay? So there's a correlation between high intensity exercise, and there's going to be probably lactic acid formation and buildup, and there's going to be some muscle soreness. But it's not the lactic acid that causes the muscle soreness, it's the high intensity exercise that creates the lactic acid. It's the high intensity exercise that causes the muscle soreness. But the point that I'm trying to make here, and hopefully it's coming through without me circling back on it 4 times, 5 times, 6 times, 8 times, which, yeah, I mean, we all know that I'm guilty of doing that from time to time. But the point I'm trying to make is that lactic acid does not cause muscle soreness, but there's a very strong correlation between the two because they're both related to high intensity exercise. So that's why obviously it's easier to have some confusion there, some misunderstanding there between, you know, well, all this lactic acid is making me sore and I need to get the massage afterwards. But that's a whole, I'm not going to get myself worked up on that today. That's BS. I'm trying to censor myself a little bit today because I'm trying not to get upset, trying not to make sure you got the kids with the earmuffs on. But the point being that just because there's not a direct causation there doesn't mean that there's not some truth to the relationship. There's not a direct A to B causation, but they're still correlated, right? And that's been something that I've been kind of struggling with as it relates to some of the science that we talked about last week and some of the posts that I've been seeing on social media recently. And this one, and I should have gone back and fact checked the name, but I don't need to put anybody on blast. So maybe it's good that I didn't. But there's somebody that I've been seeing on social media lately And it's not Matt Fitzgerald. I'm not putting him on blast. It's not him, but it's somebody like that. It's somebody that has written some books. It's somebody that if I said the name, if I remembered the name, you would know the name, or you'd likely know the name. Exercise scientist, maybe a coach, maybe not, maybe has done some coaching. Certainly prolific on social media, multiple times written books that are very good sources of information, right? But this person has been posting some things lately with, you know, dispelling myths related to running. And two of them that I've seen lately that I think because they're related, they were in the same post together. And he's been banging on this drum about strength training does not make you a faster runner, and strength training does not prevent injuries. And like, kind of disagree. But this is one of those where there's a lot of nuance. Okay. But there's also going to be a correlation here that even if we're going to say, and I'm not going to try to unpack everything. I didn't read all the studies that he apparently, you know, is referenced or whatever. Never mind the fact that I'm pretty sure there are some studies that might support some truth to those statements. But the point being, let's just assume, or let's give it the benefit of the doubt, that he's correct. And I think maybe to the letter of the law, or the letter of the technicalities of the letters of the words, he might be correct. All right. So strength training does not make you faster. All right. There's two ways. There's only two components to getting faster as runners. We've talked about this before, but just in review, the only two ways you get faster is you either cover more length with each stride, so you take a longer stride, or you take more strides in the same amount of time. So you increase your cadence. You either increase your stride length or your stride cadence. Or you can do both, of course. If you can do both, then that's, you know, we're off to the races there. Pun somewhat intended. But you could make a pretty decent argument, and there's probably some research that would indicate this, that strength training does not by itself increase stride length. In fact, if anything, it might decrease stride length, because the muscles, as they get stronger, they tend to get a little bit tighter, a little bit. So your stride length might even go down a little bit. And the strength training is not necessarily going to increase cadence, right? So you might could make an argument that, all right, well, maybe I'm looking at this thing the wrong way. But what does strength training do? All right, strength training can help create more power. You can build more explosive strength, especially if you take your strength training to the level of like plyometrics, which we've talked about in the past a little bit with some of the folks that have been on the show recently. Maybe that is kind of something that at least in my feed, I've tripped the algorithm. It pops up in my Instagram a lot is some proprioceptive exercises, or I'm sorry, plyometric type of exercises. Proprioceptive, a little bit different. But not even technically, like that's legitimately a form of strength training. And you create more power, that's going to help you to cover longer strides, right? You're more explosive, and maybe not on an easy day, right? Maybe not even at something like marathon pace, but if you're doing a sprint, you're doing something that's higher intensity, you're doing a 5K, heaven forbid we're doing 5Ks, but if we're doing a 5K, yeah, maybe it's not scientific, maybe it's not measured directly in the lab, but could you... without twisting facts, without living in a fantasy world, could there be a correlation between I'm stronger because I've been doing some strength training, maybe specifically some plyometric training that allows me to have more of a burst, which allows me with each stride, especially at a high intensity at a race type of effort or the final kick towards an effort, cover more distance with each stride, which is a key to being faster? Yeah. I mean, that's like there's smoke there. Where there's smoke, there's probably fire, right? Direct causation, maybe not. Strong correlation that could draw that conclusion. Yeah, I think so. You know, also another thing we've talked about in the past is that maybe top speed isn't what we're trying to improve, especially for a longer distance race, for a half marathon, for a marathon, shoot, even for a 5K, even for a 800 meters, even for a mile. I mean, technically, even for a 100-meter dash, but that's, you know, again, we don't need to get too technical here. But a lot of times what happens is that you've got the speed covered, but it's the endurance that maybe is lacking, right? Like that's the sweet spot of even splits, or even a negative split is where you don't slow down later in the race. And again, the longer the race, the more difficult that can be. You're not running at the highest intensity. You're not running at top speed. So you're not technically needing to get faster to race faster. You're needing to be able to maintain a higher, you know, a higher level of race day intensity, or maintain your race day pace all the way through the finish line instead of falling off, you know, by 20 seconds a mile, 30 seconds a mile over the last, you know, 5K, 10K, whatever the case might be. Can strength training help with that? Maybe not so directly that we could write a scientific paper that shows that strength training improves the ability to maintain a consistent level of effort over the last, you know, 7 miles of the marathon. But if your muscles are stronger, if you've built more muscular endurance and muscular strength, so that as you're out there for 3 hours, as you're out there for 4 hours, as you're out there maybe for 5 or 6 hours, whatever your race time is, doesn't matter. The longer you're out there, the more the fatigue starts to set in. But if you can inhibit that, and strength training, in addition to continual and consistent endurance training, but if the strength training helps to reduce that fatigue, or it helps to slow that level of fatigue, helps to maintain that endurance, are you going to be able to continue to take the normal strides? Are you able to continue to keep your cadence where you want it, to not fall off as much at the end of a race, and to ergo finish faster, to run what looks like a faster race? Maybe, maybe not, but it's not a stretch to say that there could be a relationship there, right? So is it a myth to say that strength training maybe doesn't make you faster? I mean, maybe technically, but is there enough of a correlation between strength training and running improvements that we could say that strength training is probably a good thing for runners to do? Yeah. I mean, I think so. You be the judge. And I guess this person that's still going to go unnamed because I can't remember, and again, I don't want to put the wrong person on blast. You know, maybe you're going to use that as your excuse to avoid strength training. I wouldn't encourage it. Even if there's not a direct scientific, yes, strength training is going to make you faster. Okay. Another example that we'll get into before I try to keep this from being a 30-minute episode would be like stretching and mobility, right? We've talked about a bunch of times that there's no good studies that show that stretching is going to reduce or is going to eliminate injuries, right? We've shown no good studies. There are no studies that show that stretching and mobility work is going to provide some type of performance enhancing effect. It's true. But stretching feels good, right? Like you feel a little bit better after a stretch. Even if you don't feel any better after a stretch, after a run, like what do you do when you get up in the morning, right? You're rolling out of bed. You put the arms up. You take that a little bit of a yawn, a little bit of a stretch. It feels good. But it also helps to make sure you've got a little bit of elasticity in your muscles. And again, without going too far down the depths here, but every time your foot hits the ground, there's a lengthening that goes on in your calf, right? That lengthening kind of creates a spring-like effect. It propels you forward. No cheater shoes required. Okay? So you can have that effect with every stride, but you got to have a certain amount of elasticity in your muscles. You don't need to be Gumby, right? And kids, Google who Gumby is. You don't need to be Mr., you know, Stretch Armstrong, Mr. Elastic, but a certain level of ability for your muscles to stretch and lengthen. We can't scientifically prove that A leads to B, but in a roundabout way, does it get us there? Is there enough to say that there's a correlation here, even without direct causation, and it's maybe a correlation that, you know, isn't mandatory, isn't required, isn't the only way to set PRs and have a great, you know, lifetime of running, things like that? But does it give us maybe slightly increased odds of success? Is there enough of a correlation there? I mean, I think so. And again, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm missing the point. Maybe stretching isn't your thing. Stretching isn't my thing. I mean, I'm just going to say I'm working at it a little bit this year, but more focused on mobility, which is similar to stretching. We can split those hairs later if you want to. But I think that it may or may not help me in the short term of my running, but with my goal towards running for the next, you know, I'm 42 years old. I think I've made that clear. You know, I certainly want to run for the next 30 years of my life. And assuming that I live longer than 30 years, I want to run beyond 30 years. Does stretching guarantee that? Does strength training guarantee that? No, does mobility work, stretching, strength training, functional training? Do those types of things give me the best chance of being a healthy, fit 65-year-old, 75-year-old, maybe 85-year-old? They don't guarantee anything. Maybe there's no science that shows that people that are active are guaranteed to live longer, because there isn't. I can get hit by a bus tomorrow, right? I hope not. I don't plan on running where there's... Actually, I will be running by buses tomorrow, because I'll be running the neighborhood in the morning. There'll be school buses. It could happen, right? And if you don't... Hopefully, if you listen to this, it probably didn't happen, but it could happen. But if I maintain my stretching and my strength training, my mobility work, maybe some foam rolling, continue to stay active, am I giving myself a... does that correlate to a higher likelihood that in 30 years from now, I'm the old man that's out there running at 70 years old, and maybe I'm, you know, first in my age group because I'm the only one in the age group? Yeah, it gives me a chance. It increases the likelihood. There's a correlation there. So, you know, the final thought that I'm trying to make, and again, it kind of goes back a little bit to last week's episode talking about running science and it's not being all black and white there. And there's a lot of overlap here between these two episodes. Hopefully between one of them, the message is coming through. Our bodies are complicated, y'all. Like, they're amazing machines. They're amazingly complex. Like, it is absurd what our bodies are capable of doing, and how well they're capable of functioning, even when we don't give them the best situation, whether it's dietary, whether it's working too hard, whether it's not working for a long period of time, overcoming it. Like, our bodies are awesome. Okay. And scientific research, not just as it relates to running in our bodies, but just overall scientific research in terms of health and fitness and longevity, like, that's all, those are good things. Like, I'm pro science. That hasn't changed between last week's episode. That won't change between this week's episode, even if, you know, I don't like some of the assertions that sometimes people make, because science, right? The final thought that I want to leave you with between these last couple episodes is to encourage you to not just be blinded by the science. Yes, science is a good thing. Yes, science is helpful. But sometimes science will say that there's not a direct causation here. But that doesn't mean that there's not a strong correlation. It doesn't mean that just because science says this A doesn't lead to B, doesn't mean that it doesn't in sort of a roundabout way, right? You know, might not be a right, but, you know, two wrongs don't make a right, but three lefts do, right? Just because the science says that, yeah, we can't guarantee that strength training makes you faster, but, you know, we can draw a pretty good conclusion that strength training, you know, creates more power, more explosiveness, maybe reduces fatigue later in the race. Maybe just being functionally fit allows you to keep training more consistently, and that's going to help you get faster over the long run. Like there's a lot of ways where strength training could help us get to where we want to be, even if it's not the direct route that strength training made us faster. And that's just one example. Maybe there's some dietary things there. Maybe there's some mobility things there. Sleep. A whole host of things that maybe by themselves in isolation, A to B, aren't the answer. But in the big picture, there's enough correlation there to go, yeah, okay. Maybe there's something to that. And hopefully you'll think about that going forward. So that's it for today. What do you think? What are your thoughts on causation, on correlation, on any other lation, on relation, coronation? I don't know. Whatever. We've jumped the shark here. What are your thoughts on today's episode? What are your thoughts on causation and correlation and the sometimes the firm relationship between the two, and sometimes reading between the lines a little bit? Let me know if you're so inclined. At Diz Runs on Twitter, at Diz Runs on X, I guess, not on Twitter. At Diz Runs on all the social medias, Threads and Instagram. If they're working this week, I don't know, you know, down, up, whatever. I'm on the social medias. I'm also on the email. That tends to usually be working, dizruns@gmail.com. And of course, if you want to head back to the blog post for today, some memes, some GIFs, some nonsense in there, a few links as well. dizruns.com/1225 will get you there. There's also that comment section down at the bottom of the page. Feel free to type out your thoughts on correlation, causation, how you decide if a correlation is worth adhering to and maybe paying attention to, or if it's more of a shark and ice cream scenario, in which case, doesn't, not really worth applying. Because sometimes that's a thing too. Let's not kid ourselves. Sometimes that's a thing too. But anyway, that's it for today. If you want to join Pam and about 40 something odd other people on board the old Patreon train, kick me a few bucks each month. I would appreciate it. Patreon.com/DizRuns. There's a link also in your on your device. There's a link in the blog post today. Always try to make that as easy as possible. Appreciate, you know, a dollar or two, five, whatever you think this is worth. I appreciate you. Appreciate that commitment and that support. Anyway, patreon.com/DizRuns one more time. And with that, we'll go ahead and wrap this one up, y'all. Thanks for the time. Thanks for the attention. Thanks for taking me with you today and helping to hopefully shine a little light between correlation and causation. If this was helpful for you, maybe hit that share button. Spread the word. Appreciate it when you do that. And until next time, y'all, be well. Take good care. Thanks again for listening. And we'll talk soon, all right? See you.